Zongers, you could be advertising your product, yourself, or your wares in this very slot. The Project Entertainment Network offers a wide variety of advertising options on this podcast and across all the podcasts on over 24 shows that reach a wide array of listeners. Podcasts are one of the best values in advertising because, unlike any other mediums, they offer a stunning 80% product and brand name recall. Podcasts offer a unique opportunity to reach elusive consumer bases like millennials and cord cutters, with prices starting at just $35, right on up to the elite $1,800 network-wide sponsorship level. The Project Entertainment Network has advertising options to meet your marketing budget. So visit projectentertainmentnetwork.com/advertising or reach out to armandrosamilia@gmail.com to inquire about advertising options and rates today. This is your opportunity to advertise on Bazan and all the other podcasts on the Project Entertainment Network.
The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bazan.
Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
This is Bazan, the Bizarre and Weird Fiction Podcast. With me, your host, Mr. Frank. What's up, Zongers? So glad that you could join me here on Bazan yet again. We're doing this for the 128th time. Can you believe it? I know you can believe it because you're a Zonger and you believe in what we're doing here at Bazan. In the bizarro and weird fiction community. We're keeping it weird once again this week with a brand new guest. Have not had him on the show before, and I love that. 128 episodes in, and there's still new people to talk to in bizarre and weird fiction. Doesn't that say something? Doesn't that say something to the naysayers who think this is just a small, niche, little genre of insignificance? I think it does, Zongers. I think we surprise everybody when we lay out the numbers and show them there's still fresh blood in the water, Zongers. And this week's guest, like I said, brand new book out from Nihilism Revised. And you'll know the name. You've seen him around doing his thing. He's been, doing his little short story stuff and his collections and been in Horace Lee's trash and the like. But this is his first official full-length release. So let's get him on the show and hear all about it. Please welcome to Bazan this week, the one and only Mr. Ben Arzate. Give us the gong. I'd like to welcome to Bazan this week a brand new guest to the show. We're this deep into the show and we're still getting brand new guests. Those who say Bizarro isn't robust enough are lying, because Mr. Ben Arzate joins us this week for the first time. Ben, welcome to Bazan.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, you're a name I've seen in and around the community for quite some time, but I'm finally seeing a book from you, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye from Nihilism Revised. So tell us, is this your first book?
It's my first full-length book. I do have a chapbook of poetry out as well. That's called The Sky is Black and Blue Like a Battered Child. That was self-published. So this is my first book through another publisher and my first, I suppose, full-length book. It's a collection of short stories.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but have I seen your work in Horace Lee's Trash as well?
Yes, I recently had a couple poems published there.
I thought I seen you out there doing some poetry stuff as well. It was about 2 years ago that you had your first poetry collection you put out yourself, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So the switch now, is prose something you've always tackled, or is it new for you going from poetry to prose?
No, I've been writing short stories for a while now. I think if I remember right, I'm pretty sure the oldest short story in The Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye is from around 2009, 2010.
Oh, okay. So it's been in the works for a while. What made you want to move now to get it published?
Well, I'd actually had another book accepted for publication, which is coming out soon. That book is called The Story of the Why, and that's going to be coming out from Cabal Books. The Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye is I'd had both the title and the idea that I wanted to collect my stories into one collection for a while now. And it was just recently that I finally thought that I had enough stories and put the manuscript together. And since I'd had a piece published with Nihilism Revised, I sent it to them to see if they were interested, and they were.
Lo and behold, there are. Now, astute listeners to the Bazong podcast may note that, like, I've been interviewing Nihilism Revised publishers and authors like crazy. They're not on the payroll. I swear I'm getting not time one, though at this point maybe I should be. But there's a lot of excitement over there with that press, a lot of new voices, new author voices, especially in Bizarro, popping up over there. What was your attraction to publishing with Nihilism Revised?
Well, I saw the call they had put out for Strange Behaviors, and I did have a piece which is written in the form of a sort of one-act play. It was one of those things I had written. It was something I wrote at like 2 o'clock in the morning while I was shit-faced drunk, and it was like one of the darkest and most depressing things I'd written. I did like edit it so it was, you know, readable. But I it was one of those things that I didn't think would ever find a place, but it did find a place with Strange Behaviors. SC Burke and Zach Ferguson both liked the piece very much, so I was very happy they accepted it.
I stand in envy that you're able to write drunk. I forgot which famous author is quoted as saying, like, write drunk and edit sober. Is writing drunk something you often find yourself doing?
Not so much anymore, at least partially because I've recently turned 30, so I'm trying to be a little bit healthier. But, you know, there are still times where I'll write while I'm a little bit buzzed, but I do need to heavily edit it because it's tends to be like a grammar and spelling train wreck, even if the ideas are good.
Did you write inebriated, shall we say, when you were doing poetry as well?
A couple of them I have. I'm pretty sure like a couple of the poems in The Sky is Black and Blue, Like a Battered Child, I wrote while I was drunk, and then, you know, edited them into something readable.
Interesting. Do you feel your work changes or benefits from writing while you're under intoxicated?
I think I'm a little looser with what I'm willing to put in, because when I am sober, there are times where I'd be like, I probably shouldn't put that in. But when I write after I've been drinking, it pushes out the idea of you know, somebody's going to read this at some point, and just lets me just flow out. Like I said, it's not something I do very often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm giving you this line. You're probably the first person I'm questioning on the podcast about riding intoxicated. So like you're becoming like the de facto alcoholic of Bizarro. But I apologize. It is sort of it's intriguing because I simply can't. I have no focus whatsoever when I'm drinking too. Even when I get buzzed, like I just can't write. So I'm intrigued by anybody who has the ability to put something even like minorly coherent together. And then it's sort of the process of, like, you know, waking up the next morning and going back and editing that. Like, you know, everybody, you hear that, oh, I got drunk online and I text the ex and I just made an ass of myself. But here you didn't put it out in public just yet. So you have a chance to take it back. But like you said, you know, when you're drinking and you're a little loosey goosey and you say things maybe you normally wouldn't, do you find it harder when you go back and edit sober to not take those things out? Or you're a little more like, well, we got it out there, let's leave it. How do you approach the aftermath sober to what you write drunk?
Well, with the piece that I wrote for Strange Behaviors, I didn't write specifically for them, but it ended up getting accepted there. But the piece that I wrote that was published in Strange Behaviors, there was a moment where I read it and I was just like, that's pretty, I don't know if I should try to do anything with this, but I edited it anyway. And, you know, I saw that call and I'm like, well, what's the most out there extreme thing I have? And I sent them that. The piece is called War Criminal, which is a title I'm not entirely happy with, but I didn't just want to leave it untitled like I originally did.
I gotcha. Now, Nihilism Revised likes to look for that really off the wall, experimental, you know, less form to it. Was it because you wrote that in a state that it maybe fit that bill?
I think that probably helped it out. Yeah, definitely getting it published has, you know, let me made me feel like a little more loose with what I put out, with how I write things, and you know what I put in them. It gave me a sort of realization that there really is like a market for things that are like formally unusual, in addition to the content.
Mm-hmm. So is that something you feel you've always done, despite whether you've had a drink or two or not, that you're unconventional in your writing and your form?
Definitely somewhat. Like any time, like right now I've completed two short novels, one that's being published and one that's in the editing stages, and neither of them are like completely formal experiments, but they both, I always like do something odd with like how I divide the chapters how they're spaced out and things like that. I'm not like exactly writing a Marabou Stork Nightmares, but I do like to play around with like the form.
Is that typical of your writing, or is that just sort of a mood that you do when you write certain things at certain times?
I'd say it's a pretty normal part. There's like plenty of like there's quite a few stories in the Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye, which are just complete straightforward stories where I don't do anything like formally unusual. But there are quite a few that where the form is messed around with.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's one that's written in a what I like to call centigraphs, where each sentence is a separate paragraph.
Now, do you think that because, you know, you come from a more poetic poetry written background, that lends to the style of prose that you're doing, that broken up sort of non-traditional form in prose?
Somewhat, yes, because I think the way I write is I tend to not write in a very affected way. Like the story of the Y, is the way it's written is very heavily inspired both by authors like James Ellroy, by James Cain, by like the hard-boiled writers, as well as like alt-lit writers like Noah Cicero and Sam Pink. And I do think that's a big part of it, like the idea of wanting to write these images rather than necessarily, because they have stories, but to me, like the images in the stories are very important.
I see. I understand now. So that's pretty neat. So why was it that early on you went more poetry, at least publishing wise?
It's probably because when I first started writing, I'd say back like in high school, the first things I wrote were songs. So because of that, it was a sort of natural progression to writing poetry. And I had been working on I tried to write like novels and so forth, and I hadn't really been getting anywhere with those. And I did have some like short stories and such published, but I decided like the first thing I should do is I've got like a bunch of poems, so I think I should put the best ones together and put out a chapbook.
Does the poetry come easier for you when you're writing?
It really depends. Most poems that I write, they tend to come out all at once in like a almost out of nowhere. Like a number of poems I've written, like I'll just be sitting like at work and I'll have one come into my head, so I'll just grab a piece of paper and write it down.
So that's at least, well, maybe output, you get more output out of poetry. Do you find it it you can spit out a lot of poetry quicker than you can prose?
I would say no, because I don't really like sit down to say like I'm going to write poems. I tend to just let them come. So I don't write like a ton of them, but when I have the ideas, they flow out fairly easily. I have found it easier lately to actually to sit down and write full length stories and to write a novel, because I had the one novel that's being published by Cabal Books, another one I'm currently editing. I managed to get done in under a month, I'd say.
Okay, so it's just more, I don't know, what is it for you that dictates whether you're writing prose or poetry? Is it just whatever's coming to mind, or do you sit down with like, well, it's time to write poetry, it's time to write prose?
Normally I don't really have like a method for determining that. What I'll do is like, if I have like a story idea, I'll sit down and try to pound out the first draft in one, all at once. And then I'll go back and try to like edit it, add to it and so forth until I'm pleased with it. And with the longer works, like with novels, because I already have like a few other novel ideas I want to work on. With those, I'll just say, okay, I'm going to work on this, and then just work on that for a couple hours, do a little editing on it, and then come back to it at some other time.
Okay. So it just, however the mood sort of strikes. How often what sort of time are you able to commit to writing at any given day?
It kind of depends. I actually work a job where it's fairly easy for me to write at work. So what I'll often do is like in between doing actual work at my job, I will, try to write some things. Like I write a lot of book reviews. So I'll often, take that time to write book reviews. A lot of this, the second novel that I wrote was written at work. So for me, it's basically like I don't have like a formal process or anything. It's just like I will sit down when the mood strikes me. I'll try to pound out as much as possible, like email it to myself so I can work on it at work. It's basically just me just trying to get it out when I can, however I can.
What do you, when you're writing, like at work, to transfer, is just you're able to, like move a Microsoft Word document around with you, or do you have some kind of a software thing that you're able to sort of cloud base it?
I'll just email it to myself, basically. I'll email something to myself like the night before going to work, and in between work, work on whatever I'm working on, and then email it back to myself. And and at home, I do have a backup on a cloud as well as on an external hard drive.
Are you somebody who's able to like grab a tablet or even your phone and just write through those alternate means?
No, I haven't been able to do actual work like that on a phone or a tablet. I might be able to if I could get like an actual like keyboard, but I just can't like with my thumbs type like that. the closest I've done to that is like when I've like a. Like maybe like I had like an idea for a really short poem that I would just like type into my phone. Uh-huh. And then, but like even then I just prefer to grab a piece of paper.
No. Oh, yeah. So you'll still old school it sometimes too, huh?
Yeah. Sometimes. But poems are about the only things I write longhand.
Oh, okay. Does that help you translate? Cause so often layout is important with poetry. Is that sort of the, inspiration behind keeping it longhand on paper to sort of give it that visual look as well?
Pretty much, yeah. The idea of because even like when something gets like when I publish my chapbook as an ebook and when I read it on the phone, I do cringe a little bit at how it's spaced out. Like I understand it needs to do that, but I do like wish it I was looking at it the way it's published physically, so it retains the spacing that I originally envisioned.
So
to me, that really does. That's really important with poetry.
Absolutely. Did you find that difficult? I should ask first if you self-published your poetry collection that you have out.
Yeah.
So that was because I know just sometimes getting a standard novel is all prose to get layout right can sometimes be a challenge. I imagine it gets really challenging when you're trying to do some really special looking layout and, you know, it looks one way in a Word document. And when you try to transfer over to something that's, you know, an EPUB or a MOBI, that it just doesn't want to play nice.
Yeah, the most difficult one is one of the poems in The Sky is Black and Blue Like a Battered Child is flipped backwards. So getting it so I could get it flipped backwards both in the book, in the physical book, and in the ebook was a huge pain.
Now, when you submit something to a horror sleaze trash where, you know, you're typically going to be handing them some kind of poetry piece, but they're very poetry minded folks over there. So do they take care of your work well, or you don't tend to have that much structure to your poems that you go to them?
They took care of them pretty well. Like the poems I submitted to them, had fairly straightforward, like a pretty straightforward form. So that wasn't too much of a problem.
Very cool. Now, what have you have? I mean, they're a very noted, weird publisher, and especially like that they do have the focus on poetry. Have you found a benefit to getting into their, I don't know if we call it a zine or whatever it is they're doing? It's probably a magazine, is fair to call it that. What benefit have you seen from being in there?
I did have I did put a few more eyes on my work. It's one of those things where if I could actually like see like the sales of my book in real time, I could probably translate it, but it's one of those things where it's probably more behind the scenes where I can't see where, you know, the benefit is coming.
Right, right. But you do notice, I mean, they seem to have a pretty healthy circulation and people read it readily. So, like you said, I guess you did sort of notice just more attention to your work.
Yeah, I guess like by attention, I would mean like getting more Facebook friend requests and things like that.
Yeah, for sure that. And of course, like you said, it's kind of hard to correlate sales necessarily unless you release something in and around the time that also an issue of Horror Sleaze Trash comes out with your stuff. Maybe you could make a correlation there. It's hard to do that, though.
Yeah, and they did share that my book was published when it was, so I'm very grateful to them for that.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome, too. I mean, Arthur Graham's he's just a champ, man.
Yeah, definitely.
So now we're looking at the Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye. It's just been out about 2 weeks, roughly.
Roughly around that, yeah.
Yeah, roughly around that. Now it's like you said, it's how many stories do we have in this collection?
Oh, I can't remember.
Is it a lot of like flash stuff or various? Various length stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of flash stuff there. I'm pretty sure there's one story in there that's only two sentences, if I remember right.
That's what we get when we work with people who are poets, essentially. But that's cool. So the title, Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye, is there a titular story in there, or does that sort of sum up the feel of the body of work? Where do we come up with the title from?
Yeah, the title is a reference to one of the stories, which is also titled The Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye. The title itself, of course, it comes from the Complete Idiot's Guide books you see around. I can't remember exactly where it came from, but one day I was just thinking about titles, and I just thought, like, The Complete Idiot's Guide to, and I just thought something like, to saying goodbye, and to me, that was, that was a very, that title said a lot of things to me. So that's one I kept in the back of my mind. And then the story is about a house that gets cancer and has to be demolished. So since that was a story, of course, about having to let go, the title seemed to fit it perfectly.
I like it. And looking at your just like bio description, it says you're the bizarro, you're the horror, you're the comedy guy. How would you classify Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye?
It's definitely a mixture of all of those things. There's definitely some stories that are straight up bizarro. There are quite a few comedy stories in there. There's a few like straightforward horror stories. There's at least one, I'd say, action story in there, which is heavily inspired by like 80s, 90s anime stuff like Violence Jack and Genocyber and things like that.
Yeah, so it definitely has a lot of, well, I guess, tropes that are popular in bizarro fiction.
Yeah, definitely.
How is it that you came to discover bizarro fiction?
I think it was years back. I had discovered some of Carlton Mellick's books online. I had intended to read them for the longest time, but for whatever reason, I just didn't have the money to buy books off of Amazon, and he didn't have books in the library. So I did read like a bunch of like stories online, but I never really like got into it until I actually like got some money to buy the Orange Bizarro starter kit. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's the first proper Bizarro book that I've read.
Well, interesting.
Yeah, if you don't want to count stuff like Thomas Pynchon and Wayne S. Burroughs is like proto Bizarro.
Well, yeah, Bizarro before Bizarro was Bizarro, as I like to say.
Yeah.
So those are really your Burroughs, or Bukowski. Those are really your earliest influences.
Yeah, Bukowski was definitely a big influence. Wayne S. Burroughs, Thomas Pynchon, James Joyce. Stephen King was definitely an influence. Let's see. I really like Peter Straub. Mm. Some more that I've read recently who've had a big impact on me are Italo Calvino and Richard Brautigan.
Italo Calvino, I'm not familiar with that one.
Invisible Cities, If on a Midwinter's Night, a Traveler. I definitely recommend Invisible Cities.
I might have to look into that one.
Yeah, it's really great. And what's his name? The guy who wrote 100 Years of Solitude, Gabriel Garcia Marquez. That's what his name is. Yeah, oh. He's a big influence too.
You're far more well read than I am, because a lot of those names, while I recognize them, I just never, I don't know why. Because I mean, when you talk about like Bukowski or Burroughs, I mean, everybody brings those names up, and I've never explored them, and it's probably a crime that I haven't. I'm probably doing myself a disservice to myself and to the bizarro community for not being familiar with names like that. So I guess I should start getting on that ball.
Yeah, and another one who was a huge influence was the poetry of Richard Crane. Stephen Crane. Mm-hmm. He's most known for The Red Badge of Courage, but his poetry is like really fucking amazing. It like blew my mind when I read it. I even quote like one of the poems at the beginning of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye.
Oh, okay. So you even have bizarro poetry influences as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Is that something you've read poetry for leisure as well in your more formative years?
I do remember like even like when I was a kid enjoying like things like Shel Silverstein and those other poem for kids that you would see around, like I don't know what's the name of the guy who wrote that It's a Very Boring Day poem. I remember like reading that collection when I was a kid.
Oh gosh, I don't know. Not the sidewalk at the area. I don't know. Even that guy, I can't bring up his name. I'm about Dr. Seuss, and that's where I end
up. Yeah, Dr. Seuss, that's definitely another one.
Yeah, well, I can get behind Dr. Seuss. There's where we can connect.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone in Bizarro who wasn't influenced by Dr. Seuss to some degree.
Of course. I remember as a kid, and it was funny because he must have been so whacked out, because I specifically remember being really young. And my mother, like, telling me to put those books down because they're just too weird and too crazy. Like, I don't know, she thought I was going to get a drug habit at 5 or something, but she was really, like, put that craziness down. And it's just absurd thinking it now as in my adulthood. Like, what was she so afraid of? With Dr. Seuss, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, my grandmother was very conservative, and she didn't really have any problems with Dr. Seuss. So,
oh man. So yeah, you know, I'm sorry. I was just bringing back memories there, bringing up Dr. Yeah. Seuss. So now you also have the comedy and horror angles. Is that something that always winds their way up in your work, or is that sort of specific to certain things?
I think it's definitely, you know, something that always winds up to some degree. There are some stories I don't necessarily set out for them to be funny, but for me, like when I write the character, it like feels very, very naturally for like them to crack a joke at some point or mm-hmm. something like that, even if like something horrific is happening. Mm-hmm. So, because to me, that's just how people are. Like often, like when horrific things are happening, they'll just crack jokes or try to, you know, provide some levity because they just don't know how else to react.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I get excited when I see like horror and comedy married, because that's kind of what I do when I write. And it's I'm amped up. I'm more of like, you know, a Tucker and Dale versus Evil kind of Saturday the 14th the whole way. It's corny, less so than punctuating. But I find that people react to that sometimes negatively. They're not into it with the horror. There's very serious, hardcore, dark people will have no silliness whatsoever in their horror. But I guess if you're just throwing in some comic relief, it's a little less absurd to people who appreciate the dark stuff.
Yeah, and there are some in there that are just straight up comedy. There's a story about a struggling country musician who, is constantly getting shit on by everyone, which is straight up comedic. I mean, there's one point in the story where he's busking on the street and a cop, you know, asks him if he has a license and he doesn't. So the cop shoves his guitar up his ass.
Yeah, it's always fun just to have some fun every now and again.
Yeah. And I think that story, like, it does manage to, like, talk about, like, something very real in a comedic way, because I know a lot of, a few people who are musicians have read the story, and they told me, like, you know, this is exactly what being a struggling musician is like.
The very looked down upon sort of thing. Yeah, no, that's great. And is that something you mentioned you sort of came from a music background. Did you write that story sort of from that, or just from being exposed to the friends around you?
Kind of, yeah. Cause I did stop making music at one point and, it is still something that pops up a lot. I have a lot of, now that I think about it, both of the novels that I've written are about musicians, but, and I think it's just in general being like a struggling artist. There's this feeling of, you know, everything around you is just shitting on you, especially if you can't get a break.
Yeah. 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 That people don't think well of the starving artist at all.
No, it's something they like to romanticize, but nobody actually really cares about it.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of the same thing too. I mean, there's a lot of, especially, you know, having interviewed Bizarro people over the years, is there's a lot of people who were / currently are musicians to some degree. So a lot of that struggling artist, you know, the crossover into writing, but also you find just a lot of writers in general write about being a writer. You know, it's that, you know, the underlying thing of the struggling artist, no matter what your art is, I think is there's some sort of a universal appeal to it, you know, that It's dirty, it's gritty, but it's also kind of exciting and romantic also.
Right, exactly. There's a lot you can pull from it. I mean, I guess there is like some degree of, writing what you're familiar with. So the main character in your book is a writer and things like that. Mm-hmm. And obviously at times, I don't think that's like a bad thing in and of itself, but it is like something that has to be tread carefully because it is very easy to disappear up your own ass that way.
No, completely. But I guess when you take that sort of comedic punch to it and just make fun of yourself and not take it too seriously, that really helps put you in check.
Right, exactly. It's just if you can like recognize the absurdity of your own situation.
So how much can you talk about this new book you have coming with, what was it, Cabal?
Yeah, Cabal Books. It's a sort of new imprint from Thick and Veiny Books.
Oh, yes.
I know Bix Cahill, who runs it, you've interviewed him in the past.
Yes.
Thick and Veiny started Cabal Books as the sort of quote-unquote literary imprint for it. They just recently released the first one, the first book under that imprint. It's called Goldenrod by Bram Riddlebarger. Riddlebarger.
Mm-hmm.
He's hard to pronounce name. And the next book that is coming out under that imprint is my book, The Story of the Why. We're aiming for the end of October at this point. Don't want to like make any promises yet.
So is this the story of the why? Is that the letter Y or the word Y?
The letter Y.
The letter Y. Interesting. So this is now you're saying that Cabal is more a literary sort of imprint. So we're getting are you stepping up your literary game, going into the Bukowski realm, or is this really just kind of right in your wheelhouse of what you write?
I would say it is, in my wheelhouse as far as it being more literary. I guess there are aspects to it. I didn't go into it with that, mentality, but, I am flattered that, Mr. Scahill found it, quote unquote literary enough to want to release it under Cabal Books.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a, struggling, music journalist. See, there we go. who is trying to track down a mysterious musician by the name of Y. Beckhurst, who is a like real musician who nobody knows who he actually is, and he finds a clue that Y. Beckhurst is somewhere in Mexico and heads down there with his with his friends to try to track them down, and a lot of the trip basically goes completely wrong. To me, it was a sort of adventure novel, but other people who have read it have found the surrealist aspects that I put in there, and it is very influenced by people like to an extent Borges and Marquez, the sort of South American magic realism.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of wrote that with that in mind, so to me it's kind of a mix between like an American hard-boiled road adventure and South American magic realism.
Wow, that sounds pretty intense. I'm kind of blown away. I did not know that Thick and Veiny has had started an imprint. I'm sort of on the record. I'm like a self-published guy. I'm all into that. But I am totally on the record that if I wanted to publish with anybody, I want to publish with a publisher whose name is Thick and Veiny. 100%. And I love Bix. He's a great guy. How did you even come to know about the Cabal imprint and all that stuff? Did he put out a call? It's something I hadn't even seen him doing.
I did originally just submit it to Thick and Veiny.
Mm-hmm.
I'd seen the other books that he had published, and I thought it might be a good fit for the book.
Mm-hmm.
And he loved it. And so we're, moving forward on publishing. And we were moving forward publishing it, he, came up with this imprint of Cabal Books.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had already had plans to release Goldenrod under it. Mm-hmm. And so he decided to make the story of the Why the second book under that imprint.
Very cool. But, you know, personally, I'm not going to tell you what to do. But me, I'd say, no, let's keep it thick and veiny, baby. Because I want a thick and veiny book. But that's just me. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Any opportunity to get anything published by anybody is a wonderful thing. So no harm, no foul. But for me, I want a thick and veiny book all the way.
Yeah, well, that's it. If you can, you know, contact him to see about your future work.
I will.
About getting it.
Yes.
Under that,
I'll contact Mr. Thick and Mr. Veiny about that.
Exactly, and he, you know, hopefully we'll be revealing the cover soon. He recently showed me a sort of rough draft of the cover being mm-hmm. done by the always excellent Matthew Revert.
We
just need to make some tweaks to it, and hopefully we'll be revealing that soon, and it'll be ready to go soon.
Well, that's great. Like, yeah, considering when this podcast comes out, that that announcement may have already been made or is really imminent now, considering we're looking at sort of a late October release, right?
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, obviously Cabal Books and Thick and Veiny are both a one-man operation, so I do expect delays, but, you know, it's... it is what it is.
Yeah, there you go. Now, you mentioned also, you said something about two novels. Is there something else out there on the front as well?
This other novel is one that I've recently finished. It's it's not one that I have a home for yet. I'm still, you know, in the process of editing it, and soon I'll be, like, sending it out to try to find a home for it. But this one that I just finished I consider it a sort of spiritual sequel to the first one. It doesn't have any of the characters that take place in the same locations, but I consider it taking place in the same world. And whereas the story of the Why is about someone trying to track down a mysterious musician, this next one, which I'm calling Music is Over, is about a musician who disappeared. It's also based on a real musician, a Japanese noise musician called Gero Gary Gay. That name apparently translated means vomit, diarrhea, ha ha ha. And what happened was with the head of that band, Juntaro Yamauchi, he disappeared for something like almost a decade, and like nobody knew what he was and where he was, and, you know, to the point that people started wondering if he had died. So I took and then he resurfaced in like 2016, 2017, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I took that idea, and I sort of imagined like where he could have gone in that decade. So that's what this other novel that I recently finished is about.
Now, does that have a home yet or not quite yet?
No, it's still in the editing stages.
Gotcha, right. So this could be a thick and veiny book.
Possibly.
It could be. Yeah, all right. Not saying anything,
if Bix wants it when I finish it.
This time, though, stick with the thick and veiny. No, but that sounds, I mean, those all sound really, that one sounds really, really interesting because it's got that sort of really exotic Japanese mysterious underground sort of feel to it too. That's very intriguing.
Yeah, definitely. I'm I guess I am a bit of a Japanophile, not just with the whole anime thing. There's a lot of like weird Japanese music that I like.
Mm-hmm.
like the Gero Gary Gay, like the Boredoms and so forth, and Boris, things like that.
I don't know. I know Lady Baby, and I know Baby Metal. that's my exposure to Japanese music. Well, that's cool. Ben, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time together, but man, we've covered quite a bit of ground in that short amount of time, especially for somebody who's kind of, you know, you're not new to the scene, but like, especially, you know, putting out novels and stuff like that's obviously by what we've just talked about, really ramping up for you. So do you feel like, it's kind of all novels from here, just sprinkling poetry submissions here and there for magazines for you?
I definitely do want to write more novels. One thing I do plan to do for October is release a single horror story as like a Kindle single, just as an experiment to see, you know, if people want that sort of thing. Mm. One thing I have planned maybe in the future, if there's an interest in that kind of thing, is like, do like a Patreon where like each year or every so often I put up like a short chapbook of poetry or a short story or serialized novels or things like that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm seeing a lot of authors are experimenting with that Patreon stuff now. So that could definitely work. And the Kindle single thing, it's really something I haven't heard anybody messing with too much. So that could be an interesting experiment as well.
Yeah, and just have that story out to an editor, and once I have that back and do all the editing and everything, I'm gonna release that to Kindle. Sometime in October.
Wow, that sounds pretty entertaining. I really definitely want to thank you for joining Bazong and educating all us on who exactly Ben Arzate is. Doing my best.
Don't worry, nobody gets the name right.
So, and it's really been entertaining. The latest book is The Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye, from Nihilism Revised. You can get that right now. And, he's also got that new one, coming out with Cabal. It's a thick and veiny imprint. Probably in a few weeks after this episode airs. So, and you got so much stuff going on, that definitely down the line, Ben, we want to check back in when you see how things are going to be going for you over time.
Yeah, definitely be happy to come back at some point.
Great. Ben Arzate, thank you for joining Bazong.
And thanks for having me.
There he is, Zongers, Mr. Ben Arzate, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye, now available from Nihilism Revised Press. You know, I've been talking to a lot of the folks that are getting published through Nihilism Revised. They're doing some really cool work over there, continuing to pump out some really cool, transgressive, out of the ordinary, out of left field kind of stuff. So be sure to check out Mr. Ben Arzate's The Complete Idiot's Guide to Saying Goodbye, Zongers. And Zongers, before we say goodbye to you, and by we, I mean me, I'd like to just have y'all sit around for a second and hear me out on this one, because this one's pretty, pretty important. I should be pushing it more often. Almost since the inception of the Project Entertainment Network, we've maintained a presence on Patreon. So if you go over to patreon.com/projectentnet, or just search Project Entertainment Network when you get there, go check out the Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page, where we have a lot of value-added content week after week after week, for as little as $1 a month. You get access to that stuff. And really, that one little dollar that you contribute monthly, you get a lot of cool stuff that we're putting out. There's other podcasts that you can only hear through the Patreon page. There's short stories. There's giveaways. You can win show notes. There's lots of little cool, like, swag giveaways and stuff like that. Lots of fun stuff for really as little as $1 a month. And you're going to help the Project Entertainment Network keep doing what you do. Put out great shows like The Horror Show with Brian Keene, like Three Guys with Beards, like The Mondo Method, like The Matters of Faith, like Bazong, Zongers. That's all it takes. I know we give you lots of good, fun, free entertainment, and we don't really ask for much in return. But if you feel good about all the good work we're doing and you want to get some more stuff that's hidden behind the little dollar wall, all you got to do is go over there and contribute a dollar. Could do it for a couple months, do it forever if you're really enjoying what's going on over there. There's a cool conspiracy podcast going on with Skip Novak and Tommy Clark from Necrocasticon. I myself do a podcast called Not Bazong, where I talk to and interview the other podcasts on the Project Entertainment Network and kind of pull back the curtain to see what makes those shows tick. It's a pretty fun thing I've just started doing. And I've done Bizarro Book Spotlights video, Bizarro Book Spotlights on there. So there's a lot of really cool, fun stuff over there. Please consider checking it out today, going over to the patreon.com/projectentnet, or just search Project Entertainment Network, and sign up for as little $1 a month for all that cool stuff. And Zongers, to help you out here. This is something like I didn't even realize myself. I thought it was cool, you know, to want to get into a lot of these, not even just Project Entertainment Network's Patreon, but a lot of the people who run and maintain a Patreon account. It just always seemed hard for me, like, to want to have to run on my laptop or remember to go check out patreon.com and what's going on there. And it wasn't until just recently I discovered that there's a Patreon app for your phone or your tablet that you can download and just, like, bang, you can pull up all your stuff there and just check out not only what you've contributed, what you've got available for Project Entertainment Network, but for any Patreon account that you've signed up for and want to donate, or even, you know, a lot of times now, all you got to do is follow. It's become a kind of alternate social media network where, like, you didn't even have to give that dollar. You can just follow, and you can do this for Project Entertainment Network too. And you'll get just updates, really the free updates too, in addition to any kind of a donation you make on a monthly basis. So my recommendation to you is, whether you decide to contribute or not, if you use Patreon at all, or maybe you should start, just get that app, put it on your phone, check out Project Entertainment Network or any of your other favorite writers or content creators over there, and just simply follow them and open it up. And it's a really cool, quick, simple way to keep constant tabs on what's going over there with Patreon. So that's a little additional hint tip from me, your pal, Mr. Frank. And with that in mind, Zongers, I'm not gonna shill the cool new Bazong shirt design to you, because that's always there, available in the Project Entertainment Network store's merchandise shop. You can just go to projectentertainmentnetwork.com and click on that shop tab, and you'll find all the cool t-shirts for all the podcasts on the network, including Bazong, which we do have a new design. Just saying, you might want to give it a look-see and add it to your Bazong merchandise collection. You can get that as t-shirt. You can get hoodies, coffee mugs, stickers, flags. There's so much, so many great ways to do it. So go check it all out. Shop till you drop, Zongers. And at the very least, $1 a month and you'll get access to a lot more cool stuff going on over at Patreon for the Project Entertainment Network. Zongers, I'll leave you with that this week. And you are now free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
There shall come a podcast like no other. Defenders Dialogue. Marvel Comics' original superhero non-team convenes once again. Comic book writers and authors Brian Keene and Christopher Golden take us back to the 70s and 80s as they discuss Marvel's most dynamic collection of superheroes, Defenders Dialogue with Brian Keene and Christopher Golden, Tuesdays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
Scribblers rest. Do you pop D20s like candy? Do you bleed D6s? Then Scribblers rest is your fix. Do some time with a crew of authors, artists, and other nefarious types. We have a case of dews in the fridge, and plenty of magic missiles to unload into your darkness. Slide us in your ear hole and let us work our magic. Feel our vibes every Thursday on the Project Entertainment Network.
My Favorite Story, a podcast author anthology featuring short fiction from the hosts of the Project Entertainment Network shows
Three Guys with Beards,
Jim Moore, Jonathan Maybar, and Chris Golden,
Tom Clark from Necrocast, Igbon,
Brian Keene of The Horror Show,
Chuck Buddha, and Armand Rosa Milia of The Mando Method,
Mary San Giovanni of Cosmic Shenanigans,
Jay Wilburn from Matters of Faith,
John Urban Sick of Ink Stains,
Bizong's Mr. Frank,
available on Kindle and in paperback and through the Project Entertainment Network store.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.